You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Well, they did it. The Palouse Thunder notched a win in the victory belt. This is their first notch in the last season and a half, so it was pretty exciting to be out there. First regular season win, that should be, since the 2005 season. So, yeah, this is pretty exciting times. The Human Development 205 class consists of 200 students who are pioneering awareness for Habitat for Humanity. They're hosting a spring carnival at Lincoln Middle School on April 21st, 11 to 3. There will be many activities for the family to enjoy, including a petting zoo, face painting, obstacle course, and a cakewalk. Come and enjoy the day while supporting the Habitat for Humanity in the Palouse area. Want to go to the Sasquatch Music Festival? KZUU wants to send you. Call the KZUU Sasquatch plea line. If you can convince us you deserve to go, we'll send you and a friend to both days of the Sasquatch Music Festival happening Memorial Weekend, May 26th and 27th at the Gorge. For more information, visit KZUU.org or call the Sasquatch line at 509-590-2207. That's 509-590-2207. Are you staying in Pullman this summer? How about trying something totally new and athletic? Something which is outside on the water. Something where you can get in shape and meet some really cool people. Sign up to learn to row and challenge yourself with the ultimate team sport, crew. Practices are three times a week. 2 weekdays from 5:45 to 7:45 p.m. and Saturday mornings. Sessions are 4 weeks long. Try one or stay on for the whole summer. There's even a summer finale fun race regatta at Coeur d'Alene. No experience is necessary. This is a summer to remember. When else will you get a chance to become a rower? Visit www.cougarcrew.com or go to more information. Contact Coach Erickson at 509-334-6618 to get involved. Had a bad weekend. Need legal services? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday from 9 to 5 and Friday 9 to 1. KZUU DJs, Republic Service announcements like what you heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym Room 126B. Or fill out a form online located on the staff button, email it to psa@kzuu.org. Or for more information, call our office at 335-2208. Of course, coming up in just a moment, we're going to have the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. The Evergreen today, there was a letter to the editor stated, drivers should learn to drive the speed limit. Editor, the speed limit on a state route 26 is 65 miles an hour, which is partially right, actually. There's places of 50, 55, and 60. But anyway, a leg of it is 65. I'll give her that. Drive it on any random weekend out there and you'll cruise along without a problem. However, when coming back home from break, everyone seems to forget how to push on the gas and traffic slows. Following the same car full of people going about 50 miles an hour for around 50 miles is annoying. After getting fed up and passing them, I unfortunately discover 5 more cars in front of them. So I did that, what many others would do. Floor it. Passing probably isn't safe. But this could have been avoided if slow people would just live a little. I sped along at about 70 miles an hour for about 5 minutes until I reached the next pack of mindless followers and immediately slowed right back down to about 50 miles an hour. Fantastic. Worried about a ticket? That's okay. But it's comical that on campus on the weekend, it's filled with cop-dodging drunk people. But we can't get a few miles an hour over the speed limit. Which is really more risky ticket-wise? Stumbling past an officer armed with a breathalyzer going 10 miles an hour over on a deserted highway. To you Sunday drivers, most of us have places to go before we're old. It would be greatly appreciated if you perk up. Plus, you can avoid all the angry students flipping you the bird as they pass. We promise you can point and laugh if you see us getting a ticket. Amanda DePaul, freshman in English. I thought that was a pretty interesting letter, because you see that it's Highway 26 turns into pretty much a motor raceway of students trying to get from Pullman to Seattle in the shortest period of time possible. And it gets pretty interesting. There's actually a letter to the editor some time ago talking about alternative routes to get to the Seattle area, one of which was going up to Steptoe, which is about 10 miles north to Colfax, and then taking Highway 23, which will sort of cut you over from Steptoe over to Sprague. And then from Sprague, you could just hop on I-90, and it's I-90 the rest of the way into Seattle. That way is probably... it's probably a little bit longer when it comes to the number of miles driven, and it might time-wise be a tiny bit longer as well because it's not quite as direct. However, the fact that you're competing with very little traffic, and once you get on I-90, you got two lanes, so there's never an issue of passing. On a bigger weekend where you do have tons and tons and tons of people going really, really, really slow, it actually makes it probably a little bit easier to get to your destination, A, safely, and B, quickly. I don't know. I try to do what I can to go on the non-peak traveling days just because I hate having my speed dictated by other people. I prefer to do my speed limit. I love to put my cruise control on and just cruise right along. And and what gets frustrating for me is, like, you'll drive 50, 60 straight miles with not a car going either direction. Clear roadways. Then you come upon one car. And you're going to pass that car, but just at that moment, of course, there's a car going in the opposite direction. So that really sucks, and it causes me some grief. So anyway, do the speed limit. Do everybody a favor. Be cool about it. And we're going to hear one more time from the Reverend. Welcome back. On the telephone with me, I have fresh back from Virginia, Danny Shawns. How are you doing, Danny?
I'm doing well.
Yeah. All right. So we had a really fun big event happen up in the queue last week, and you had a big part of that. Tell me a little bit about what happened up there with the
event. Well, we were showing a documentary called Outside the Wire. It's just a JD. He's the guy that followed the unit. He followed them for about 8 months or so, and it's just stories from the soldiers of what they're going through. What's going on over there, and it's an inside look at what's really on, and you don't see this kind of stuff in the news, and it was just really interesting, and the college Republicans and I decided to share the student body. It was awesome.
What was the movie, I mean, what kind of things did they talk about in the movie that you might not have seen on the news?
Why they're there, and the progress that they've made, how they feel about it, and our armed forces, everybody's a volunteer. We don't have a draft, and these Marines in the movie, some of them are fourth tour in Iraq, and they just really want to be there, and they're making a difference, and they just like what they're doing. And one of the underlying things of the whole documentary was, they said that, we're doing this so you don't have to see it. So they're fighting for us over there so we don't have to experience, terrorism and stuff like that.
So the soldiers who are over there on their fourth tour, they've chosen to do that, or is the American government forcing them to continue doing these tours over there?
Oh, they chose. One of them chose to do that. They were actually going to send him home early because he's already done three tours, and they were trying to send him home early, but he put in some paperwork to try to stop that so he can go on his fourth tour.
That's pretty incredible. So you have this movie showing. How was it that the College Republicans set this screening up?
Well... I wanted to do something with Iraq. We didn't touch that issue all year. And I was trying to think of something creative to do. And it was just on the internet, and I just saw the documentary, and it sounded really good. And I sent the director and the makers of the movie an email, and I said, you know, what's this about? And we got in touch, and I bought one of the movies, and I watched it, and it was just really great and powerful. It was just, I've never seen anything like that on the news or anything like that, and I just, it was awesome to share that, and we just all voted on it as a group, and we decided that we were going to show the movie, and we did.
Could it be possible that it's not being, you're not seeing it on the news because this is craftily edited footage in order to make it seem different than it really is?
Oh, it's not edited at all. The whole, like, structure of the movie, there's no copy and pasting. It's just, a lot of it's just interviews with the soldiers and what they're doing out in the field. Like, JD, the guy that made the movie, he'll ask one of the Marines, well, how do you feel? How do you feel about what you're doing? And the Marine would respond, and, you know, they would say, you know, we're really doing some great things over here. We're making a difference, and we're fighting over here, so you don't have to see it.
So is it possible, though, that when those Marines are saying it, they're like, this war is very good. We are, are they reading cue cards?
No. They're, you know, they stutter and stuff, and, you know, they talk like, you know, you or I, we all make mistakes, and you can just tell, and they have big smiles on their faces, and you can really tell they're really passionate about what they do. I mean, there's no, this isn't like, this isn't like Fahrenheit 9/11. This is like, it's just really real, and you can see it, you know, it's all outdoors, and they're sitting in a chair, and, you know, they're just anxious from their heart, and they tell funny stories about, in the MREs, they have a candy, it's called Charms, and it's, they blame the bad weather on the Charms, and so anytime somebody eats one of the Charm candies, they harass one of whoever ate that candy, and it's just pretty funny to see them joking around in that environment and just being themselves. So they're definitely being themselves. It's not choreographed at all.
So the movie overall, it was a good movie, learned a lot from it.
It was an incredible movie. And post-movie, we had some veterans who fought over in Iraq. We had three of them. And they articulated to, you know, the 130-plus people that were actually at this screening that, you know, this is probably the most accurate representation of the war they've ever seen.
That's incredible. So what... If you had to pick out, like, one or two things that were just unbelievable to you or that you really just took you by surprise, what would you say they were?
Oh, gosh. I would have to say two things. These guys that were there fighting for us, these men and women, they're my age. You know, they're 18, 20 to 21 years old.
How old are you?
Yeah, I'm 20.
Oh, okay. You're 20?
Well, I turn 21 next month. But
okay.
So these guys are our age, and, you know, they're fighting for you and me. And, you know, each one articulated, you know, freedom isn't free. And it just makes you think about, like, what really those stars and stripes mean. It's just, it's an incredible look at where we've come from and where we are today and where we're going. You know, we're the greatest country in the world, and we're the land of the free and the home of the brave, and it's because of people like them that make that possible to say and to experience, because without these servicemen and women, you know, we wouldn't have the freedoms that we have today. So it's just really incredible that, you know, we have people over there making the ultimate sacrifice to preserve our way of life, and it's just, there's no words for it. It's incredible. It really is.
Okay, so let me ask you, how would you respond to somebody if they were able to ask you right now? Well, if we weren't over there, A, they wouldn't be making the ultimate sacrifice, and B, the fact they're over there isn't making us any safer here in America. So really, we don't need them over there making that ultimate sacrifice.
Well, what was articulated by the veterans is, you know, they are making that ultimate sacrifice, and, you know, they are fighting for our freedom because they're the only ones that truly know what's really going on over there. And they said even, you know, you're never going to see this in the news, and it's really hard to really grasp, even from this documentary, what's really going on there, what they're really doing. And, you know, the veterans, you know, they spoke, they detained Jordanians, Syrians, Iranians across the border and trying to kill our Marines and our service members. And you can tell, you know, give line of terrorism. That's where we're fighting it, and that's where everybody's going. And, you know, even if we weren't over there, the, you know, our armed forces are still making the sacrifice because they're ready to do whatever our country asks them to do for you and I. It's just incredible. They're just willing and able whenever we need them to go and fight for us.
Alrighty. So you believe that them over in Iraq is making a difference for our safety here in America?
Oh, definitely.
Alright. So we have this showing going on. We have how many people do you think showed up that stayed for the whole movie and whatnot?
Oh, at least 30.
30?
What's that?
You're cutting out from time to time, and it sounded like you said at least 30.
At least 130 people.
Oh, 100. Okay.
Stay for the movie as well as the experiences and question and answer session that the veterans from Iraq shared.
Okay, now something happened just before the movie started that some people would say was pretty
cowardly.
Cowardly might be a word. Disrespectful might be another word.
Pusillanimous.
There you go. What? Go ahead and tell me about what happened. I'm curious.
All right, members of the Young Democrats, and also, to my knowledge, the student union.
The Progressive Student Union. Yeah.
Yeah. They were. It's funny because they were in the back right of the room. Of Q202. They were in the back right, sitting in the back rows. And all of them decided to get up all at once and sit in the front row. And Dan Ryder, our WCRF East Vice Chair, was giving an introduction on the movie and telling what it's about and stuff like that and, you know, just giving everybody a background. And he was also telling people that there may or may not be veterans coming up to share their experiences. And it's up to them as to whether they want to have a question and answer session. And these Young Democrats and Progressive Student Union people, they rudely interrupted Dan Ryder. And they insisted on their opinions and asking the WSU College Republicans questions on the war. And, you know, since none of us have fought there or even been there, we're no experts, and we did not feel qualified to host that kind of exchange. And I articulated to them that no such exchange would take place in any shape or form. And I said, I reiterated that there may or may not veterans that would come up and speak, and it's up to them as to whether they want to answer questions. But we were not going to. We're not going to.
So this wasn't
exchange.
So this was not set up as a debate.
Mm.
So why did the Progressive Student Union College Democrats come forward and believe that that was the case?
Oh, it's just one of their river dancing moves that I'm sure they. Throughout the year, it was a staged walkout. You know, it's just something immature that they do.
So, at what point did they walk out?
They walked out as soon as I said that there will be no exchange of opinions and questions between our group and yours.
And this was before the movie actually got shown or anything like that?
Yeah, this was about 30 seconds prior to pushing the play button.
Okay, so they showed up and then made a huge scene about walking out before the movie was started, which I know as just in general, that seems to be a favorite thing that Democrat groups like to do when they're protesting. They'll show up en masse, and then just before it gets going, they'll make a big scene about walking out sort of showing that, you know, we don't like this particular thing, whatever it is, to happen. And what we're going to do is we're going to get up and walk out to show you how many people were against this. It's sort of like, rather than just not showing up at all and only seeing a few people show up, and rather than standing outside and picketing, if that was their big thing, they'll actually go inside and then they'll make a scene just before the activity gets started, causing the activity to be delayed or making a scene while the activity is going on. And it's it's sort of an interesting thing. It's like for a group that's supposedly open-minded, that's willing to listen to both sides and whatnot, it seems like the minute that – before they even listened, because there was one case years ago where a speaker came to WSU, and they immediately, before he even had a chance to speak and engage in dialogue, they walked out on him. And it's like, how can you say that you're open-minded – if you aren't even going to listen to what he says, you're just going to make assumptions about what he's going to say, and you're going to walk out on him and not listen to him. How is that open-minded?
You know, it's not, and they're just a bunch of hypocrites, and they're cowards, and they're really just they're a disgrace to everybody that was in that room. Purely speaking, they're a disgrace to the veterans that were present. I mean, we have people that, you know, were prepared to give their lives for our country that fought in Iraq.
Well, the Democrats probably had to go out. Well, they probably had to go out and find some more tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Or boots or whatever they needed to find.
Yeah, and it's just it's funny you should mention that, because, you know, I was unaware that the young Democrats ever did anything on campus. I mean,
they help pollute the environment by using all those non-biodegradable balloons and blowing them up and putting them up on the library at a football game to represent the number of people killed. But if you were to do something anti-environmental, I'm sure you would hear about it. Like, I mean, how many times have people done events where people said, oh my gosh, that was so unenvironmentally sound because of all this waste after the fact? And then what do? They put on an event that used like 2,000 balloons. It's like, how is that helpful to the environment?
Some
poor little ducky probably came up and ate one of those balloons and died. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted your point. You were saying that you were surprised they did anything on campus.
Yeah, and apparently they did this. They did the whole classic, let's put out some shoes to signify the fallen U.S. soldiers in Iraq. And they claim that they're signifying the fallen. They're showing who fell in Iraq in this conflict, in this war. It's like, why? Why would you do that? You know?
Here's a question.
In a time of war, why would you show what we've lost?
Now, here's a question that I would have for them. If they're showing by the number of boots or shoes by the pairs how many people have died, my question would be, do they have a story about each one of these people? Do they even have their names listed with each one of these? My question would be, if you're really trying to pay tribute to those who died, you should at least know something about them and not just the number that died. What you're doing, you sit here and decry the college Republicans for shock value, shock value, shock value. What do you think you're doing by putting out a couple thousand pair of shoes? You're making a scene.
No.
You're trying. It's all about shock value there. It has nothing to do with paying tribute to those who've died. If you have no stories about each and every one of those pair of shoes, you're not paying tribute to that person who died. All you're doing is you're going to a website, you're finding a number of people that died, and you're putting out that pair of shoes. The college Republicans at least will go out there. They'll have information. They'll have facts and figures that you could talk about. Oh, the fence. Oh, my goodness. That was so, so shock value. That was just, I mean, it was shocking to see a fence up on campus. I mean, I know the Cub is surrounded by a fence, but just to see a chain link fence behind the college Republicans with those signs on it, I was just shocked and dismayed. I just didn't know what to think.
I know, it's like, why didn't they put out, this is a rough estimate, I think I'm within 5,000 though, I believe 405,000 United States soldiers died in World War II. How come they didn't put out that many shoes?
Well,
you know?
Of course, they only want to pay respect to the most recent war. They don't care about any other war. They don't care about any of the other troops. All they care about are the most recent ones, obviously. Otherwise, they might have put them out for the ones who died in the first war, and maybe Vietnam and Korea, maybe World War I, World War II, Spanish-American War, maybe the Civil War, maybe the Revolutionary War. But it's not about paying tribute to the soldiers. It is all about the shock value, and it's all about trying to say, look at how many people have died. This war is horrible. That's exactly what they were doing.
You know, if they hate the war so much, then why don't they fight against it? Why don't they go join Al-Qaeda or something? It's like every time we have one of these demonstrations, I've asked them a couple times. I said, anything good about this country? Can you say one thing? Can you say, hey, I like Barnes & Noble down the street. I like getting a cup of coffee with my friends before class. Do you like the weather here? Do you like freedom of speech? Do you like one thing about this country? Not a single one of them said anything. Not a single one said anything. It's like, well, how about do you like, you know, spout rhetoric? Do you like doing, because, you know, that's something that, you know, our country has allowed you to do. It's called the First Amendment.
Exactly. And that's the interesting thing about it is that it's the soldiers of the First Amendment that allows them to rally against the country and the soldiers. You know, it's a really ironic situation there.
Yeah.
What I find, though, and I've said this before, is that I think that the difference between a real big difference between liberals and conservatives is that conservatives tend to be optimistic and they see the bright side of things. Liberals tend to be pessimistic and see the negative side of things. That's why when it comes to talking about America, the conservatives, like the country, they embrace all the things that are positive about it, and they use those things to help shine the country and look at it in a good light. You know, Ronald Reagan loved the country. Ronald Reagan said a lot of great things about the country. You know, he's a conservative that a lot of people love to live up to because he was a great conservative. And then you have liberals who tend to find the negative and the faults with everything. They don't find the positive. They always find the faults. They find the bad things, and they dwell on the bad rather than focusing on the good. And it's, you know, if all you do is focus on bad things, that's all you're going to see, and you're going to be pessimistic, you're going to be bitter, you're going to be mad about things, rather than focusing. Yeah, I mean, seriously, think about it.
It must be a hard life being a liberal.
It is. Think about that. I mean, honestly, everything that happens, you're bitter about it. You know, a good thing happens and a lot of people focus on it. What do you see? You see the people who were hurt by that. You don't see all the people that were helped. You don't see all the good that came out of it. What you see is the bad because somebody was still hurt and we got to think about them. You know, and that's the problem is that they tend to focus on the negative side of everything. They can't see the positive. They cannot see the good. And by focusing on the negative, by speaking up and not allowing the negative to not have this limelight, you know, it's almost like it's one thing that I read a long time ago that stress, you know, sort of talking about reasons why having stress is good. And one of the things it said is having stress makes you seem important. And I think that sort of goes with liberals is that their negative aspect, their negative point of view, being negative about stuff and worrying about all these things causes a great deal of stress. And stress does make you seem important because the only people that get stressed are the ones that are really important, that are really hard worked and that have a lot on their shoulders that they have to take care of. So if they're stressed, then obviously they're very important people. But, I mean, realistically, I mean, I talk to you and I talk to Batman, Tom Forbes, you know, I talk to a lot of conservatives and it's always positive stuff going on. They're always seeing really good things happening. You know, you obviously love the country. You see a lot of great things about it.
Right. Everything's great. What's not to like?
Well,
it's just, we have a border. A couple things.
We have a border that's wide open, allowing a large number of illegal immigration from all over the place coming to the country, and that's not a good thing, is it?
No, it's terrible. What was that guy that made, I think it was called The Christmas Story? Right, with the BB gun.
Right,
BB
Gene
gun.
It's Gene Shepard, I believe it was.
Well, whoever wrote that movie, or I think wrote it or maybe even produced it, him and his son were killed by an illegal immigrant.
Oh, that's right. And that just recently happened, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, down in California.
Yeah, and a 16-year-old, daughter... that was 16 years old to two wonderful parents, and her best friend were in a car, also killed by an illegal drunk driver.
And then you also had the shooting over at the UW, where the guy was—he had come over here on a, I believe, it was a student visa or some sort of short-term visa, and then he just went underground. So he was here illegally, and he ended up shooting and killing somebody over at the UW. You know, and it's just one of those things where. You can point to so many things where people die. You know, you can say, well, if guns were illegal, all those people at the Virginia Tech wouldn't have died today. Well, not necessarily. If the guy was really ambitious, he could have definitely got bombs, which would have done, you know, I mean, go into one classroom full of students, you're gonna do just as good of a job. As a matter of fact, I would say a reasonable bomb would have done a better job than a handgun or an assault rifle, because the assault rifle, you still have to somehow aim and move it around and shoot, where the bomb is indiscriminate. And that's what's so bad about bombs, is that they are indiscriminate. They'll just kill everybody around. And so people are going to find these arguments that, well, if you did this, you could, you know, these people would die, and it did this, and these people would die. And it's like, well, here's one argument that you can't, with guns, go with. Guns are legal. Guns are constitutionally protected. Guns in the hands of a bad person makes bad things happen, just like a 2,000-pound car in the hands of a bad person could make bad things happen, just like a bomb that could be made from normal legal devices in the wrong hands could be a bad thing. There's a lot of things that people can use, or should I say misuse, that could be bad things and hurt and maim and kill other people. But here's one that you could do something about at the very beginning and nip it in the bud, and that's called illegal immigration. If an illegal immigrant is in the country and kills somebody, and we had done something about it at the very beginning, that illegal immigrant wouldn't have been in the country to kill somebody to begin with.
Yeah.
You've just named off 4 or 5 people that would not be dead right now if we'd done something about illegal immigration 20 years ago.
I know.
If we had done something 20 years ago, there'd be people alive today that were killed.
I'd love to see these people that, you know, murdered all these 5 people and see if they could climb a 20-foot corrugated steel fence.
You know, but or just in the fact that we.
We already have laws. We should start enforcing that.
Right, exactly.
Arizona's the only one that's doing it.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that the guy who killed the lady over at UW wasn't from a country on this continent. He was from another country on another continent. But the problem is that we obviously don't view illegal immigration as that big of a deal that we're going to spend a lot of time hunting the people down. We figure if we find them, we find them. If we don't, we don't. Oh, well. And the problem is that we need to be very vigilant about it. If somebody's here illegally, why in the heck are they here illegally? There's a lot of people in our country. Think about somebody who commits a crime that then all of a sudden they might get on like a top 10 list. They might get, you know, they might have all these resources tracking them down for committing a crime, right? Well, isn't the whole concept of illegal immigration a crime? Shouldn't we be looking for illegal immigrants and saying, look, you've got to do things the correct way? You'd mentioned that there's very few people that are doing things about illegal immigrants. On Facebook, one of the people who would be considered that's on my friends list, who tends to be a lot more on the liberal side of the column, she wrote this little note. She said she had just recently moved and she hadn't registered at her new place, but where she used to live, the city council is debating on this new ordinance. And she said it really makes her angry that the city that represents her, even though it's not the city she lives in anymore, it's because that's where she's registered to vote. So the city that represents her is planning on putting an ordinance in that's going to directly affect the illegal immigrants. And she's mad about that because, darn it, anyway, they have a right to try to feed their poor, starving children. All they're trying to do is make a better life for themselves.
Whatever.
And there are no
problem.
there are no ways of legal immigration for most of these people, so they have to go about it illegally. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, where's the world's smallest violin player right now? You know, that's not our problem. Their welfare is not our problem. You know, they're having a hard life in their country. Oh, well, you know, we have our own country to worry about. You know, the law of the land is we have sovereign borders, and that's what makes every country a country, is borders. And there's a due process for everything, and there's a due process to this country legally. You know, you can't just do something because it's going to better you or because you want to. Like, if I'm hungry and I go into a grocery store, I can't just steal a loaf of bread just because I want to and I need to.
Well, some people would argue that you should be able to. If you're starving and you're hungry and you need food, you should have the basic human right, which is the special word that people use for any kind of right that's actually not one that we would normally have. It's sort of like, oh, well that's a human right. That's a human right. Not starving is a basic human right. Therefore, anything you do in order to alleviate starving is okay because it's a basic human right.
Well, if you want to alleviate starving, then go get a job.
Ouch. Come on. Stop
no,
being so
I'm not,
mean.
No.
Yes.
No.
What's up with you, man?
No, I'm saying...
Forcing people...
I'm saying,
don't you know that we vote Democrat because it's easier than getting a job? Come on.
No, I really believe that, you need... you need to... hold on, Dan's getting in the car.
Dan's getting in the car?
Dan Ryder.
Oh, wow. Dan and Danny.
Scotty.
The dynamic duo is working on it, eh?
Yeah. Well, you know, really, you can't just steal, you can't just rationalize something because you need it or you want it. And, you know, you have to work for things. There's no such thing as a free lunch, as they say in economics. And, you know, you want that, if you want that loaf of bread because you're hungry and because you need it, then you should do something about it. You should better yourself. You should get a job, you know.
I've tried three times and they won't hire me. I mean, I'm demanding $50,000 a year and they just say no. So how can I get a job? I've tried.
Okay, if I can get a job at 15 years old, then anybody can get a job. There's always something you can do. Like when I was 15, I was bussing tables, you know, I was cutting grass. You know, you can, there's stuff
you
can do.
You're a drug dealer?
I did a little. I cut some Bermuda, you know. But, you know, there's always something you can do. There's always something you can do.
But that would force some people who don't want to work, though. And that's just not right. Because realistically, I should have a right to be fed because it's a basic human right. And I shouldn't have to do something to get it. Because if I have to do something for it, then it's not truly a right now, is it? I mean, really, if it's a basic human right, just like healthcare, I shouldn't have to work for it. I mean, it should just be given to me.
No, I disagree with that. We weren't given freedom. We had to fight for it.
So you
we
think,
had to work for our freedom.
You think that people should not be able to have healthcare?
No, I think healthcare is a good thing.
Then why can't I get it?
To tell you the truth, one of the issues I am not very knowledgeable about is healthcare. So
yeah,
I'm really sorry, Scotty.
Well, let me just tell you, I want healthcare for free, and I can't have it because of people like you who say that I have to do something to earn it. Because I'm saying it's a basic human right.
Well, you know, we have a capitalist economy. You know, it's free enterprise. You make what you are. You know, you have to work for things. Nothing's a handout. If you want to live in a country with free health care, move to Canada.
But that's I should be able to have it here. I shouldn't have to move. It's a basic human right. It shouldn't matter where you are on the world. As long as it's a basic human right, everybody should recognize that and give it to me, right?
I don't think so. I think you have to work for it.
You know, that actually, you seem really cold and cruel right now. I thought you were a warm-blooded, nice person.
Oh, I am. I am. I consider myself a realist.
Okay. So anyway, we're going back to the whole basic human right thing. I mean, it's ridiculous that people – what I love about people is they love to throw out all these rights – I don't know. What are your thoughts, just in general? What are your thoughts on these anti-smoking laws inside of restaurants and stores and businesses and whatnot that, you know, the people of Washington passed? The law that says you can't smoke within 25 feet of an entrance, you can't smoke in bars and bowling alleys and businesses, any place that has employees. What did you think about that law?
Well, I'm not really aware of the law and the details of it, but I, you know, from what I hear, I think it's a good thing because, you know, secondhand smoke has been proven to cause cancer.
Okay. So what about me as a business owner being able to decide what I can and can't do and what I would allow my patrons to do or not do as long as it's a legal activity?
Well,
hasn't that been taken away from me?
There is a loophole. You can turn your establishment into a, I think it's party club.
Yeah, like a private club.
And then
right.
You just pay... Party clubs. you can just pay like a little fee, and then you have a card, like Munchies. You can smoke
right.
inside of Munchies.
So, but what you're doing though is you're taking time. you're taking a legitimate business and forcing it to change its business model to be able to fit in with the this law. Where I would think, as a business owner with property rights, that I should say, on my property, we're going to allow smoking. If you don't like it, you can get a job somewhere else as an employee, right? Isn't that what we tell people all the time? If you don't like working for, say, Walmart because they're slave laborers, then you can find a job somewhere else. But obviously, that's not necessarily the case because people choose to work at Walmart and they keep on applying there and they work there for months and years on end. So obviously, they do like working there. But the point is that if you don't like to work for an employer for whatever reason, because you don't like the hours you're given, because you think the boss is a jerk, because you don't like the environment you work in, then you can quit. You can go get a job somewhere else. And as the owner, if I want to have smoking in my restaurant and you, as a patron, don't like smoke, you could always go to another restaurant somewhere else. You don't have to go to my place. So where my argument is on that is that you've taken away property owner rights. You've taken over the rights of the owner of the business to allow legal activities to take place on the grounds of that business. And that's where I disagree with the law. Now, on a personal level, I do like going to, say, one of the local bars after a softball game and leaving and not smelling like smoke. It is sort of nice. I will give you that. But at the same time, you know, how cool is it from time to time you're in the right bar, say, like Rico's, and you're kicking back, listening to some jazz, drinking some of the darker, you can't see through it type of beverages and kicking back with the big old cigar, you know, having a nice stogie.
Yeah, stogie.
Well, you can't do
like
that.
Like Warren Cubana. Yeah, well.
But as the business owner of Rico's, I should be able to allow that, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I guess I see where you're coming from now.
But, you know, so anyway, what was interesting is that we have that in Washington, and other places are looking to enact laws like that. And this is the thing that just made me go, what in the hell are you saying, dude? This guy actually said, well, yeah, I think this law should pass because people who are smoking inside the bar are taking away my right to breathing clean air. Excuse me? Your right to breathing clean air. Wow, that's a new one.
Oh, gosh.
So, anyway, it was it's interesting just the whole how people throw the word right on something, and it's like then all of a sudden nobody can infringe upon that. The right to drive. Well, it's not a right to drive. It's a privilege to drive, and I argue that it should become a right. That way the state and the federal government cannot put so many regulations on things like making the implied consent portion of it, making people give biometric information to be able to get a license, making these things more of a right and less of a privilege. You might be able to argue and get away with that or do away with that kind of stuff, because that's how the government gets you. If they want your fingerprints and they want your biometric information, they want to get a iris scan and maybe a sample of this and a sample of that. You know what they're going to do? God, You think I'm joking. I'm not.
get a little buffet going of genetics.
Yeah, well, in Colorado, for instance, you have to give a thumbprint. Washington right now, you're not forced to. But in Colorado, you have to give a thumbprint. And then they encode it on the 3D barcode on your driver's license. And you know what they say? You don't have to give the print, but you don't have to drive either. Well, there you go. In Washington, they're doing this thing, part of the Real ID Act now, where you pay extra money and you can get a driver's license that's actually part of this Real ID Act, which would allow you to use it in a situation where you might not be able to use your Washington State driver's license, like maybe getting across Canada border or whatever else, right? Well, in order to get this, you have to give certain pieces of biometric information and pay some extra money for it as well. And the law does say that they will have a way of expunging this biometric information should you at some time down the road decide you don't want to participate in this Real ID Act anymore. But here's my argument, and it's twofold. First off, how can you prove that that information is truly gone? There is nothing you can do ever to prove that information is truly gone. You've got to trust the people who are in charge of that database, of that information, of your information, that they are going to follow through and get rid of that information about you. And number two, I believe that once they get this going, it's going to be 15 years and it's going to be mandatory for everybody. No doubt about it. 15 years or less, you will see that this biometric information will be required for everybody for the privilege to drive. So, anyway, Danny, I appreciate you coming on the show, as always.
Oh, thank you.
It's fun to talk to you, and it was interesting, this Outside the Wire. I really wish I could have been there. As a matter of fact, sounds like it would have been nice if anybody from the media would have been there, huh?
I'm sorry, from where you cut out.
Oh, okay, I said it would have been nice if anybody would have been there from the media, huh?
Oh, yeah. You know, the funny thing is, every time the college Republicans do something, we're front page in some newspaper.
Right.
And we're big news. We do big things. We're a big member of the community. And nobody came. And a couple of the reporters said, you know, we already had prior obligations. Well, you know, when there's a car crash, and they have prior obligations, I mean, I guess nobody's going to cover that story because they're busy, huh?
No, of course not. No, it's not like they don't have, I mean, so the Evergreen and Daily News, all those things, they only have like one reporter each or something? Or?
Apparently.
Wow.
But, you know, the Evergreen, they never cover us anyway, so that was no shock.
Well, they sure publish a ton of letters to the editor against you guys.
Don't they?
I mean, it seems like after the English as the official language of America thing, gosh, if there wasn't at least 36 letters to the editor every week or every day, gosh.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It was. And the thing that's frustrating about it is just that it seems like rather than this goes along with what we were talking about earlier, how rather than listening to what you guys have to say and debating you on those specific issues, they make assumptions about what you are meaning, and they will they'll disregard what you have to say, and they won't even actually listen to what you have to say. How many people came up to you and before they engaged in dialogue and before they actually found out exactly what you meant, were already mad and ready to fight with you guys as far as verbally?
Oh, every single one of them. Every single one of them.
So how is it – that's my question. It's like, so how is it that you can be an open-minded person if the minute you walk up, you're ready to start arguing with somebody and you honestly don't even know what their argument is? How can you argue against somebody's argument without knowing what it is?
You can't.
You can't. But the problem is that you make assumptions of what their argument is, and rather than listening what they have to say, and that's, you know, it seems to me the information that was put in the newspapers was very biased. It didn't really seem to represent truly what the whole issue was. It more seemed to really what the article of the focus of the article really seemed to be is not what the demonstration was, more what the controversy of the demonstration was, which really in a lot of ways focused more on what other people were thinking and what your points of view were in some ways, rather than the overall, this is what the demonstration was.
Yeah, it's just every time we do something, there's always the same people that come up to us, and they have the same argument. They call us racist and stuff like that. They just want to come and cause trouble.
And that's really open-minded of them, so. Yeah. All righty, Danny. Once again, I appreciate you coming on the show. And
oh, can I just say one thing really quick?
Oh, of course.
One of the questions that never came up to the veterans is, and by the way, they all loved what they were doing over there, and actually, I believe one of them was actually to serve in Iraq because they really believe we're making a difference, and they really believe in what we're doing over there, and they're fighting for you and I. But a question that never came up was the support your troops question. Can you support the troops if you don't support what they're doing, i.e. the war? And they said, absolutely not. You cannot support us unless you support what we're doing. They said they get so sick and tired of people bantering that around. Oh, we support you, but they don't support the war. Well, they just said they called BS on they're really free that people say one thing, but they don't, you know. It's like a Nancy Pelosi, you know?
Well, you know, that's actually a very interesting point. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yeah, so you support what they're doing to honestly support the troops.
Well, think about this. You're a religious person, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Catholic.
Okay. Now, how often is it that maybe you not personally, but you hear other people who are religious might say something about, well, I don't support the fact that he's doing this, whether it's, you know, his sexual preference or whatever, but I support you as a person. I mean, well, sort of like hate the sin, love the sinner.
I could have wrote that comparison.
What's that?
I don't really think I can. What are you trying to get at?
No, the whole, do you believe that, I guess what I'm getting at is that it's funny that the Democrats will often tell you that when you say, I hate the sin but love the sinner, is what I was getting at, more or less.
Oh, yeah.
That, no, you can't do that because that's who the person is. You can't just hate the sin and love the sinner. You know, if you say you hate the sin, you hate the person. But then they turn around and say, well, I support the troops but not the war. It's like, well, what is the troop?
Yeah, you can't do that, the troops, the veterans told us. You just can't.
So they pretty much see right through that, and when they hear somebody saying, well, I support you, but I don't support the war, they pretty much roll their eyes and say, you're an idiot.
Pretty much. They you know, one of them kind of got a little upset, just like he was like, I'm so sick and tired of that.
Yeah,
because it's not true. You can't support the troops unless you really support them 100%.
That seems to be a big mantra of the left.
Yeah, well, they can slide down their rainbows and do their river dances and out as in protest and like that, but
slide down their rainbows.
They can slide down their rainbows.
That was vividly said.
Oh gosh.
All righty, Danny. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
And maybe we'll have you on one more time before the end of the semester, and you can talk about all the great things the College Republicans have in store for the 2007-2008.
Well, definitely, because we have a demonstration this week.
Oh, really? Do you want to get a little heads up for people so they can go and watch it? Or
I think on Wednesday we're going to hand out flags to people, the American flag to people that want one.
Oh, dude, what's up with all the shock value?
Oh, we're
handing out American flags. What are you trying to say?
Proud Americans. We're just proud Americans, and we like to spread the American flag. It's a good thing.
I would really be interested to see how this gets twisted in the news and how many people. I would love to see a video of any one person coming up and yelling at you for doing this.
Somebody's going to call us a racist.
Exactly. You know why? Because you're going to be like, well, why are you handing out American flags, you evil Republicans? Is it because you're trying to say that the only people allowed in America are Americans and that we can't have illegal immigrants and that you're anti-Mexican because you're not going to hand out Mexican flags as well?
Yeah, well, you know, last time I checked, we were only one country.
Oh, good call. Yes. So anyway, Wednesday up on the Cub Mall, is that where you're going to be, or are we going to be at?
Yeah, it should be between 10 and 2 all day, this Wednesday.
10-2 on Wednesday. You're going to be handing out American flags. So show your patriotism. Go up and get a flag. Pat them on the back for all the good they've been doing this semester and issues they've been bringing up and things that they've been willing to talk about, even though they have been vilified by professors and other people around campus as being evil, mean people. They're actually saying what needs to be said.
Definitely.
Thank you, Danny. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Scotty.
Bye-bye. All right. Once again, Danny Shawns from the WSU College Republicans telling us a little bit about what it was all about, the Outside the Wire movie that was shown up in the Cub, and the controversy that came due to the way the college or the Young Democrats and the Progressive Student Union went into the event. Clearly, their whole goal was to cause a disruption. The event wasn't put on as a debate. It wasn't put on as a here's this side and here's that side. It was put on as here's a video we're going to show. So the fact that they showed up and got, quote unquote, the fact they showed up and got outraged by the fact that there was going to be no debate and they all got up and left was nothing more than pre-planned and showmanship. Poor showmanship at that. Here you have these veterans that supposedly you supported. Kathy McMorris doesn't, as somebody pointed out on Palooza Ticks. But all of a sudden, when it comes time that you could actually show you support them and talk to them, no. You get up and leave before you get a chance to see what they're all about. That's not supporting anybody. That's just a poor demonstration as far as I could see it. And it was disgraceful. It was disgraceful to see people, more or less, they use the lack of debate as their catalyst. And how often do you hear anymore that people have this quote-unquote outrage? Oh, I'm outraged that this person did that. It's all manufactured outrage. It's a way to get your name, your source, your whatever you're for into the news, into the media, so people will listen to what you have to say, and maybe you can get something out of it. One of the things that I'm thinking about right now that is all about that is, and it's not really so much outrage so much as getting a lot of press coverage, is this whole carbon offset thing. And when we come back from our little break, we'll get a little bit more to talk about the carbon offsets. In the meantime, of course, we are going to go to the top of the hour, starting off with the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. Listening to 90.7 FM on KZUU 90.7 FM. Still, the PES broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. The Avery Microcomputer Lab in Avery Hall shows free movies every Friday at 5 p.m. Movies include Outfoxed, Talladega Nights, Brother, The Goonies, Rocky Port Picture Show, Children of Men, and more. For a full listing or more information, visit the AML website at www.aml.wsu.edu. The KZUU stream is running. Listen to your favorite shows from anywhere on planet Earth as long as you have a connection to the Internet. Just visit www.kzuu.org. Click on one of the Listen Online links, and we'll take care of the rest. Want to go see the Sasquatch Music Festival? KZUU wants to send you. Call the KZUU Sasquatch plea line. If you convince us you deserve to go, we'll send you and a friend to both days of the Sasquatch Music Festival happening on Memorial Weekend, May 26th and 27th at the Gorge. For more information, visit KZUU.org or visit our Sasquatch line at 509-590-2207. And that is 509-590-2207. You can reach me on the phone in the studio at 335-2207. If you want to talk about any of the things we just finished talking about, that would be a wonderful time to do so. Also, I got coming up Jared Edgington of the Evergreen Football League will be calling in, and we'll be talking about all the great football action that took place this last weekend. Telephone, we have none other than Jared Edgington of the Evergreen Football League. How are you doing today, Jared?
Good, Scotty. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So how about that Evergreen football action this weekend, huh?
Yeah. We had some really close games, and I actually took a shot to my prediction record. I was 2-2 this weekend.
Ouch. And let me just say, you went against the wrong team when it came to the Palouse Thunder, mister.
Yes, I did. I expected Okanagan to win that one, but it's okay to be wrong because we still win.
Right. Either way, right. And I can understand it from reading your prediction. You pretty much were saying that when you lose three starting linemen from your offensive line, the protection for the quarterback and the running back just probably won't be there. And I could totally see how. And even in a close game, you would swing it definitely towards the opponent in that situation.
Yeah.
But it looks like we had a couple guys that were able to fill in pretty well on such brief period of time. So,
yeah, exactly. They did really well. I mean, that was this one was it was hard to go either way. Two games that I had to predict this week, I could have gone either way.
Flip a coin in the air and see which way it lands.
Yeah, pretty much. But, like I said, with the Thunder missing three linemen, I figured that was a pretty big thing, especially, with Okanagan traveling up with who's proven to be one of the best defensive ends in the league, Justin Kupke, as also known as Manchild by his teammates.
Wow.
Figured that he was going to have quite the day. But, the Thunder really stepped up, played well, and they kept him in check, as well as the reigning defensive MVP, Sean Townsend.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean Townsend was definitely making a difference, especially later in the game. It seemed like he wasn't in it at the very beginning, or at least I wasn't seeing him very much. And then all of a sudden, it was like every other play, he was doing something, whether it was on the offensive line or whether it was on the offensive side or the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
He's a very versatile player.
The guy could play. The guy even played some quarterback for him before. He'd snap the ball for you. He'd do everything. So he's one of those really good, talented football players that just don't know why he didn't go to the next level, but we're glad to have him.
Yeah. So what? Tell me a little bit about the Thunder game.
Well, Thunder it was a tale of two halves, as you saw. In the first half, the Thunder were trailing 25-12, and everything that could have gone wrong pretty much did, all the way up into where they had a fumbled punt snap in the end zone recovered for a touchdown, Okanagan
yes.
did. And
yeah, that was sad.
But going into the half, it looked like pretty much Okanagan was dominating both sides of the ball, but Thunder came out. I don't know what happened in that locker room. I definitely would have loved to have been a fly on the wall. But they came out, and they not only shut down Okanagan's offense completely, but they put up 16 third-quarter points.
And that was obviously the difference in the game, and went for two two-point conversions, completed both of those.
Yep. Yep, they did.
And, you know, I'll tell you, their defense definitely put up that stand. The Thunder had their back against the wall. Unfortunately, I mean, it took Okanagan four downs to move the ball 1 yard. But the Thunder defense, really, I think last season, you would have saw the score on the very first attempt on almost any game from the 1 yard line. And the Thunder held on and held on and held on. And finally, they're able to punch the ball in. And get that I believe that might have been their final score of the game.
Yeah, they did really well. I mean, Blake Manley, Tim Nicolello, and Scotty Nelson, they had big days for the Thunder.
I was going to say Trevor Ball seemed to be out had some pretty big plays.
Oh yeah, Trevor Ball,
well.
Can't forget about him. Yeah, he was right up there as well.
He had a couple. Yeah, he had a couple great punts.
He did.
I mean, there's a couple. I thought because those actually the one thing that I noticed is it seemed like the. Defense got through the line really fast on punts, and I thought there was going to be a couple possible blocked, and one of them, which was a pivotal punt. I mean, not only did he get it off, he rocketed it, and I believe that was also the one that the Thunder ended up getting a fumble recovery off of that. I believe it was Aaron Taylor, wasn't it, that got down there and recovered a fumble, giving the Thunder the ball at about the 20-yard line on Okanagan's side of the 50, which was a tremendous punt to start with. I mean, a huge punt.
Oh, yeah.
And just the whole work. So Trevor Ball definitely had some good plays. Plus there's several plays that he was making he was making the solo tackles out there and everything. So
yeah, I would have to say I was really taken back by the punt formation that the Thunder were using, because they were running four wide and only five down linemen, and Okanagan just stacked it up and was blown through the line every time. But they made some adjustments there at the halftime, changed the formation, and then Okanagan wasn't able to penetrate as well.
Yeah.
So it was a good halftime adjustment. So they, like I said, the Thunder fought hard, and I did my previews, released my previews for the next week, and didn't realize it, but that is the first league game the Thunder have won since June 11th of 2005. So they had quite the drought, but they fought hard for this one. They earned it.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was actually saying on the show this morning at noon when I first came on, is that this was the first Thunder victory since 2005, because I know they went regular season. They went 2006 without winning anything. And, you know, the first three games of 2007, they hadn't won. I mean, they were winning some preseason games, but they haven't won anything regular season that actually mattered in the win-loss column. So,
they really stepped up. I mean, Brandon Irvin had two punt returns totaling 80 yards. I mean, 40-yard average. I haven't gotten all the other numbers in for the other teams for this week, but I have to say he's probably going to be a front runner for special teams MVP of the week.
Sure.
Or player of the week, excuse me. Yeah, MVP's at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But he was big, and he had a good game defensively. In fact, he should have had an interception for a touchdown, but as we were talking at the end of the game, I told him, I was like, Brandon, catch first, then run. You were looking at end zone. He's like, all I saw was the end zone. I said, you got to catch the ball first.
Yeah.
But he did have a big day and defensively as well. Everybody for the Thunder, they earned this game.
Yeah.
It was a good victory for them.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. And of course, not to take anything away from the Thunder and their victory, you know, the Commandos, of course, were playing under a very heavy heart and down several players. So, that couldn't have – I mean, I would have to say, as a competitor, when it comes to game time, most competitors actually do pretty much shut out everything that is external except what's going on right at that moment.
Yeah.
But you can't help to think that, you know, missing some of the players that they're missing. And there still had to be a little bit of it, you know, at times where you were thinking about it and stuff. So.
Oh, certainly. You know, I mean, it's not to take anything away from the Thunder victory. They earned it. And this is minor league football, and this is the way it happens. You play the game with who shows up. They were a little shorthanded and, had a lot on their mind. And as their owner said, they just found it very difficult to even think about football. But, you know, David Cotner told the team, he's like, go play this game. You know, you got a responsibility, so play the game. So they traveled 21, played with a lot of heart. And, I look for them to bounce back next week when they host Stateline at home.
Sure. And then The Thunder are traveling to where?
They are going to play the Tri-City Knights.
Okay, and I'm guessing you probably picked the Knights to win that one.
I did. Sorry, but, you know, right now Tri-City's, I don't know if many people have known, but Tali Ina, who played at Wazoo for 1 year before transferring to New Mexico and then has done some stints with some AFL 1 teams, he's the new quarterback for the Knights. And his first game out against Blue Mountain, he had a pretty rough time, didn't play well. Haven't gotten their numbers yet, but from what I've been told, he threw a touchdown and ran for two. And this is a 6'5", 240-pound man that runs a 4.5 40.
So he's playing for Tri-City?
He is.
Ouch.
The quarterback.
He
had his second game.
I'm trying to remember exactly what happened at WSU. He was a quarterback here. He played some games, and I don't think he was getting the play time that he wanted, or didn't Brink went out the starting position, and then he
Gesser.
Left?
I think it was Jason Gesser at that time.
Was it Gesser at the time? Holy smokes, that was a long time ago. Okay.
Yeah, he was backing up Gesser and wasn't getting the play time he wanted, so he transferred to New Mexico where he started.
Right, and I was sort of disappointed because I was thinking, you know, once Gesser was gone, he was going to be, it looked pretty good with him, but, you know, then you have the Brink Swagger thing, but let's not talk Cougar football, let's talk about EFL football.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's really exciting, though, that, you know, you got, I mean, I remember watching him play, though, and he could be a scary guy out there on the field. So,
yeah, when they were playing Blue Mountain, being as big as he is, the D-backs and stuff come up, and they went for his knees. Well, that happened once, and after that, he just started hurdling players. you know, like I said, I haven't gotten their numbers yet, but from what I've been told, their offense is really starting to click. You know, he just had his second game with them, and, you know, of course, defensively, they've always been dominant. They shut down Nick Petrie, the running back for Spokane, who just 1 week ago put up almost 200 yards rushing against Okanagan. They pretty much held him to little to no running. So defensively, they're stacked, and their offense is starting to click. So it could be an interesting game.
So what do we have as far as some of the other games that took place around the EFL on Saturday?
Well, we had Wenatchee Valley Rams played a non-league game. They were on bye week. They played the Snohomish County Vikings out of the Northwest Football League from the Seattle area. And Snohomish won 21-20.
Oh, wow.
Dave Mott, the quarterback for the Rams, threw three more interceptions. He's up to, I believe, 13 now. He's having a hard year.
Wow. That is, you know, after a while, that's just going to start weighing on you as a quarterback, even if some of them aren't your fault. After a while, that's just got to be, I mean, you're going to get shell-shocked. You're going to be like, that's too bad.
He's having trouble, and Brian Bailey did get their numbers in. I think he finished number two in the league in rushing last year. They held him to 15 yards.
Wow. So,
but they had their fullback, Nate Gowning. He stepped up, and I think he had about 70 yards rushing. So when I actually lost that non-league game, which doesn't go towards the EFL stuff, we don't count non-league.
Right.
Then we had Spokane hosted the Tri-City Knights, in which Tri-City Knights won 25-13. It was 25-7, and I guess Spokane threw a Hail Mary with no time left and scored. So,
well,
hey, it counts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, so, it counts.
Yeah, the Blue Mountain Stars hosted the Columbia Basin Riverhawks, who is our expansion team this year. Blue Mountain was ahead 20-12 at the half. You know, the Columbia Basin held in for the first half like they did last week. But unfortunately, they're low on numbers, and that took its toll and ended up losing 47-12.
Oh, wow.
Brandon Tate, running back for the Stars, had 24 carries for 204 yards and two touchdowns.
Wow.
He was our rushing champion last year, so he had a big day. And then the other one I picked wrong, actually, Yakima Mavericks went to State Line and left with a win, 12-10.
So you'd pick State Line to win that one?
I did. They're an early favorite to make a run for the championship, and apparently it was quite the dogfight, and weather had its toll. There's a lot of hard hitting from being told at that game.
Yeah.
But Yakima did what they had to win the game, and they left victorious, so they're 3-0 now.
Wow. So I was going to say, Yakima seemed, I mean, if you were to ask me with my little knowledge of all the other teams other than the Thunder, who would have won that game. I would have gone with Yakima just because of past history. It seems to me, my point of view, like I said, I'm not deep into the league like you. That's why I have you come on the show and talk. I viewed State Line as a weak team and Yakima as a strong team. So I would have definitely picked State Line to lose that one. So
well, State Line's a completely revamped team this year. They got Zach Henningsen at quarterback, who played at Whitworth. They also have another Whitworth receiver, Dustin Frank, and then of course Jamal Allen. Everybody knows Jamal. He's the all-time leading receiver in the league. He went back to State Line this year, as well as Travis Herzog and Daniel Franklin. He was the offensive coordinator with State Line the first year. He went to Blue Mountain last year, led them to the number one offense, and now he's back at State Line again. So, and then not to mention defensively, I mean, they've got they got the best defensive line in the entire league, hands down. So Josh Queen and...
I was going to say Josh Queen, that really big guy.
Oh, yeah, the really big guy that shattered the sack record in four games last year. and they also have Simmons, known as Rambo. Honestly, I couldn't tell you his first name. I just know him as Rambo. He's healthy this year. And so they're pretty stacked on both sides of the ball. So sounds like defensively they had a pretty good game, but their second game in a row where offense is just not clicking yet. So
what's
State Line will make a, I think they're going to make a run for the playoffs.
Now, I know a couple people from the Thunder had moved out of the area. Did any of them end up landing on other teams?
No, actually. Josh Arno left. Dan Wicks left. But neither of them have. Wicks did sign with State Line, but I guess he got a job in Montana.
So that's going to be a commute.
yeah. Though they do have some. State Line does have a couple of players from Montana, actually, that commute over and play. So.
Huh. I guess it's probably not too bad if you're going to State Line, but then if you have to go anywhere else in Washington, add on another 200-plus miles. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so they like what the league's about. They like what the minors are, and they prefer to play with them. So there are a couple of really good ball players over there. So State Line is pretty stacked, but I think they'll bounce back. It's a hard. This one's another hard one. Okanagan and State Line. I mean, Okanagan is at home, so. But I went with State Line.
Yeah.
So I think they're looking for a breakout offensive day, and I think they're probably going to get it this week.
All right. So okay, tell me the lineups, and I'm going to, with my limited knowledge of the other teams, I'm going to give you my predictions, and we'll see if the guy who knows nothing does better than the guy who knows all.
Well, I don't know if I know all, but you got a pretty good working knowledge. All right, we got Okanagan at home against State Line.
Okay. Next one. I'll tell you after we get them all written down here.
Tri-Cities hosting Palouse.
Okay.
All right, we have Spokane traveling to Columbia Basin.
Okay.
And then the game of the week, Wenatchee hosting Blue Mountain.
So Wenatchee is hosting Blue Mountain.
Blue Mountain, yeah. So let's see, Scotty. I might actually call you every week and get your picks, and we'll start tracking you because I do have three people that do predictions, but I'm not revealing who they are until the end of the year. But they are players or coaches. So I got three guys that are all tied right now with the same. Prediction record minus their own games. We don't have them predict their own, so they only do three games.
Sure. So
all right, Scotty. Let's hear your picks. I'll start putting you up on the website. Then we'll see what you do.
All right. Well, I've got Blue Mountain versus Wenatchee, and of course you've got to preface this with the fact that I know nothing about any of these teams other than the Palouse Thunder and previous history of what these teams were at one time.
We'll hear yours, and then I'll give you my spiel. How's that?
All right. So I'm going to have to say, you know, you're going to make me do this, but I'm going to have to say the Tri-Cities over Palouse.
Okay.
I mean, realistically, I love the Thunder and everything like that, but I think there's still more building that needs to happen, and Tri-Cities are already there. Tri-Cities are a darn good team.
They're two-time defending champions. So, yeah.
And it's not so much that the Palouse even need a lot more building. It's just that the Tri-Cities are just that darn good.
They are. And they signed this week Blake Schoenberg, who previously played for the Stars as a receiver. He's on the all-time league leader list in a couple of categories. He now plays for the Knights. So.
Oh, geez.
They're becoming that more powerful.
Okay, so we have the Tri-Cities winning.
Okay.
Oh, man. Spokane over Columbia Basin, and I think that's going to be no doubter.
Okay, no doubter.
No doubter, yeah.
All right, let's hear it. Who do you think it's going to be?
Okay, State Line versus Okanagan. You know, like I said, State Line did score and do pretty good against the Thunder, but I didn't think that they were all that great. Okanagan, I know they were hurting a little bit on some of their players, didn't have everybody there, but State Line seemed to do a better job putting away the Thunder overall than Okanagan did. I felt that Okanagan was a weaker team overall, so I'm going to have to go with State Line beating Okanagan.
In that first game, too, they didn't have their quarterback, so Jamal Allen, the receiver, was playing quarterback.
For State Line?
Yeah. Zach just played his first game.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Because I remember I was like, why do they have the wide receiver playing quarterback?
Yeah, that would be why. Minor league football at its best.
Yes. And then we had Wenatchee at Blue Mountain. And Blue Mountain used to be what we called the Walla Walla Stars.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. They just changed the name to Blue Mountain to encompass the whole area.
And the Wenatchee Valley Rams. I mean, dude, they're the Rams.
Yeah, they are the Rams.
Should I be one of those people? Like, I like their uniform better, so I'm going to root for them. They got a better stadium, though. Wenatchee has a great stadium, right?
Yeah, it's
I hear the Apple. What is it? The Apple?
Well, they're not at the Apple Bowl this year. They're at Eastmont. And Eastmont's turf is a little chewed up. So it's we called that first game when they played Tri-Cities, we called it the Dust Bowl because it was a lot of dust.
No kidding. Okay, I thought they were playing at the Apple Bowl. I heard that's a really nice field.
The Apple Bowl is, yes. It's probably next to Lamson Stadium where the Knights play. It's probably the second best stadium.
Yeah, well, I know Walla Walla, when we played them in 2004, it was sort of a close game. They didn't seem all that good, but, you know, that was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Walla Walla seems to me they're a middle-of-the-road team, and Wenatchee, it seemed to me that they're a pretty strong team.
Okay.
But Blue Mountain is going to Wenatchee.
Mm-hmm.
My heart is telling me that, the intuition, that part of me is saying something that I got to go opposite of what I would normally think.
All right, so what do you think?
Well, my mind is telling me that Wenatchee is going to win. But that little piece of me is saying, no, you got to go with the opposite of that. You got to go against your logic on this one. And if that's the case, I need to say Blue Mountain.
I would say Blue Mountain, and this is why. Right now, Wenatchee's offense is struggling. They're turning the ball over on the average of 5 times per game. You can't win a game, turn the ball over 5 times a game.
Oh, heck no.
Blue Mountain is not only going to win, but they're going to win big.
Oh, wow.
They're going to go into Wenatchee, and it's going to be at least 21 points or more, I'm guessing. You just can't win games, turn the ball over, and what Blue Mountain's got the number one offense in the league. You don't want the ball in Brett Jay's hands, their quarterback. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, how close was I to your predictions?
Well, let's see. You didn't tell me Columbia Basin Spokane game yet.
No, yeah, I did. I said Spokane hands down.
Oh, hands down, yeah. It'll be a very close first half because Columbia Basin is a decent team. They're much improved over the team that was previously in that area.
They just don't have the depth to give people a rest.
They run out of gas. And that's what's going to be the story all year long. They're going to play. I mean, they were down by, I think in my previews I wrote, they've been down in their first two games, only down by 8 points or less at the half against the upper echelon teams.
And then all of a sudden.
If
it was a one half game, they'd be really close.
Yeah, they'd be really close, but you know, you can't expect everybody to play both ways the entire game. It's a 60-minute game, and it just, you know, these guys aren't conditioned for that. So,
No.
You know, they have families and jobs, and don't have the time to spend in the gym 24/7 like a professional athlete.
Sure.
So yeah, you got that. I would say you got that one right.
Okay.
You're talking Blue Mountain over Wenatchee. You got that one right. Tri-Cities over Palouse. I'm sorry, Thunder fans, but their Tri-Cities are going to win probably.
Hopefully, they don't disown me for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring that up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wait a minute, you're going against your own team? Come on. But,
yeah, and then Okanagan State Line, you picked State Line. That's exactly what I picked this week, all four games.
So I'm right down the list with you, huh?
Yep, you're right down the list with me. We'll see. To date, I'm 8-4. You know, where last year I was 27-5 overall. So
yeah, you're not having a very good season right now.
But, you know, like I put in these last previews, I truly believe it's because the league is getting stronger, the teams are getting better. You know, last year it was pretty predictable. I mean, you knew who was going to win. It was easy. This year, I mean, teams have gotten better. Players are getting younger, faster, stronger. I mean, we're getting a lot of parity in this league. I can say I don't know if anybody's going to go undefeated. I mean, Blue Mountain definitely has a strong bid, but they have to play Yakima, you know, and vice versa. So I very well could see nobody undefeated in the league. It's hard to say.
Yeah. And it's interesting that I would think of a lot of the teams out there, teams like Yakima, State Line, Walla Walla, or Blue Mountain, Tri-Cities, all those, it would seem to me, would have a pretty consistent team from year to year for the most part, because they have more or less a static population base to choose from, whereas yeah. Palouse has sort of a double-edged sword, which is interesting. First off, they have a very transient base, so they could get a good player for 1 year and then they're gone.
Yeah.
Or they could get a good player, but then once the school year is over with, they might leave, depending on how the season's going and how dedicated they are to the team. Yeah. But at the same time, you would think that the Palouse Thunder would have such a huge base to work with, because you got how many students go to U of I and WSU every year that played high school football that would probably love another chance to play? Yeah. You know, you would think that there would be a huge number of quality football players coming to the Palouse every single year, that if they could tap into that market and hold on to them for 3 to 4 years until they graduate as seniors, the team would be very, very good. But it seems like I don't know if they don't get the recruitment they need out of the students, if the students, by the time they get here, they're not interested in football anymore, or if the money is an issue that sort of scares people off, or what it is. But I would think that if the Thunder worked really hard on the campuses, maybe even holding player drives actually on the campus during a school day or something like that, and giving information out, that they could get some really quality players. I know, Casey Thomas, one of the running back for the Thunder right now. You know, yeah. he's a student at WSU that I don't know exactly how he found out about the Thunder, but you know, he's one of those guys that it's like, I bet there's two or three dozen of those guys you could get around the two campuses without a problem. And with that kind of team, the Thunder would be really hard to stop.
I think a part of the problem is the present ownership is actually, he moved his job, moved him to Rathdrum. So he's a little bit displaced, but
an absentee owner.
There's going to be some ownership changes coming here in the very near future with the Thunder, so that I think they'll be more local, so they'll probably have that ability. And I agree, the Thunder should have one of the best teams in the league, just from talent base, you know, to draw from two major universities. It's kind of hard, though, when you live, I'm not sure how far Rathdrum is, 80, 90 miles away. It's kind of hard to, you know, do all your family time, your job, and then make time to come up and do these kinds of things. But I suspect there'll be some changes with that here in the next year or so.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was noticing on the Thunder website, www.palousethunder.com, there was a message on there from Rob Dunn about having the upcoming offensive tape reviews at his place, and then he had said something about getting information to cover for Jerry Lima for the next couple weeks, and I was curious what's going on with that. Do you know anything?
Actually, Rob, I do have a regular job, work for a fire department, so I do have some time off, and I had to get my round of golf in today. And I don't
you
answer
just
my
had
phone
to get out
golf.
There.
I did. I had to get my round in. Rob had left me a message while I was playing to give him a call, so to talk about some things. So here in the next day or so, I should have a better idea of what's going on. They gave me a brief before the game of what they're talking about doing, but nothing's been concrete yet. So
gotcha.
By next week, I'll have some definitive answers, but hopefully I'll find out here today, actually, because when I speak to Rob.
Okay. So you think there's going to be some ownership changes with the Thunder?
I believe so. Okay. It sounds like, but until it goes through the approval process through my office and stuff, Jerry Lehman will be the owner until I get a chance to go through and see what their plan is.
Sure.
We don't just approve anybody to be an owner. there's some pretty strict guidelines I've set forth. So
what does it take to be? I mean, what kind of things does an owner of the football team have to do? What kind of money do they have to be able to have in front and all that kind of stuff?
Well, we figure on the average for startup, you need at least about $20,000 for operating capital. If you don't, then it just won't work. It's expensive. It's an expensive sport. And that's just to get your basics and stuff of that. And so it takes quite a bit of money is the big thing. And, fortunately, we're pretty stable. Our owners have done a good job. We've only had one occurrence where we had to dismiss an owner from the league due to financial indiscrepancies. But the new owner, who is Sean Marshall for the Knights, he just purchased a $47,000 advertising package in an auction for $12,000. I mean,
wow.
I guess money's not an issue for him. So, it takes money is the big thing.
Yeah.
Then, of course, the commitment, the time. There's a lot of things involved with trying to own it. You just can't show up. I get inquiries every year, 4 to 5 inquiries a year from people that want to start up a team, and I start telling them about the things they need, and I never hear from them again.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. I mean, you don't want that transient person that, on a whim put together. I mean, it sounds like you need to definitely do a lot of planning, get a lot of financial backing going. I mean, because one of the things, and I think this is no knock against anybody at all in the Palouse Thunder organization. This is just the reality of what I've noticed. A lot of other teams seem to have a lot of community support, and they have radio that actually travels and broadcasts the game via radio back to their home station and all that kind of stuff. And it would be really cool to see that kind of stuff for the Thunder. And I sort of wonder sometimes if why we don't get the kind of community support that some of these other places do, unless it's because we have two major colleges with two major teams that, a minor league team just really doesn't cut it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, do you see that?
I do. But I think, honestly, the biggest thing in some of those areas that are very successful is the people that are running it were pillars in their community. Like Okanagan, for example, the board of directors told me that team would never last. They said it's too small of a community. They just can't support it. And I said, there's something to be said about having a small community. Not to mention the guy that is owning and head coaching the team was a stellar athlete, went to college and played football, and he's a school teacher there. So some of these people have their success because they were successes in themselves when
gotcha.
They were in those areas, just like Paul Preston with Wenatchee. He's been coaching football in that Wenatchee area for over 52 years. You can go into any business, anywhere. You can stand on the street corner and say, Paul Preston, and I guarantee you somebody will go, I know Paul.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about that. I think those are big, big reasons why those teams are that successful and get that kind of support. But the universities do play a factor, just like the Spokane team. They got everything there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more family and friends that come and support the team.
Right.
So being at Nine Mile Falls now, they've pulled in more fans in their first two home games than they've had in 2 years.
Wow.
So, again, they've gone to a smaller community, and they've embraced them. Unfortunately, they're 1-2 right now, and the only game they won was on the road. So they've lost both home games, and they're they've asked for a little bit of reprieve in the scheduling next year for their home games.
Yeah.
they're slated to play
sure.
basically all the top teams at home.
Yeah, and, really, I mean, to get that kind of support, you have to have – you got to do wins. I mean, you got to leave the fans with a win because, if fans just keep coming and watching losses, after a while they'll stop coming to watch. you know, give them something to embrace. So
yeah, that's human nature, unfortunately. You know, I mean, you start winning, then yeah, the fans do come. So I mean, that's maybe why Wenatchee has been so successful. Okanagan, I mean, first year team last year made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I mean,
well, very cool.
It definitely does help.
Yes. And, you know, the Thunder have one under their belt, and I would love to see them come out of the Tri-Cities with a huge upset. And
yeah, they very well could. I mean,
you know,
they
played
the defense like they did last week. They definitely got a very good shot of coming out of there with a win.
Yeah. So, alrighty. Well, thank you again, Jared. I'll look forward to talking to you next week, and we'll see how everything went.
Alrighty. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Jared Edgington from the Evergreen Football League. And you have the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. And we will be going directly to, I'm guessing, the Batman?
Correct.
Hey. You know, I got here and I looked into my bag of stuff that I have with all my, you know, whatever, my headphones.
And you don't have the bat signal again today.
No, I don't. I left it. I was in a hurry to get out of the house because I had a late morning. And I go, I mean, I'm like, oh, grab everything, go running out of the door. And I'm like, oh, no. So.
Quite all right.
Cool. So how's life treating you?
Good. I heard you talking to Danny earlier.
Did you?
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
I actually had the chance to be there in person, finally, for one of the College Republicans events this year. You know, I'd missed out, you know, since unfortunately I have to work for a living. I was not able to, you know, earlier, like last semester, take off, you know, for the various demonstrations that they had.
You know, Tom, if you were to vote Democrat, you wouldn't have to do that.
I know. Where's my living wage? Can I just stay at home and blog and get a living wage? If someone can give me that, then I will vote Democrat.
There you go.
Anyway, so I was glad that I had an opportunity to to attend last Wednesday night, and I was really impressed. I mean, I thought things went. I mean, I was looking forward to seeing the movie, and I thought the movie was excellent. I hope maybe there'll be an opportunity for people to to see it again, because you know, I think there's going to be probably some buzz about the movie. I think, you know, kind of putting on my Roger Ebert hat here. I mean, I think one of the reasons the movie was so successful is that it seemed to really, it wasn't like to use the example of another group that was on campus the day before, like a Frontline documentary on PBS. You know, it wasn't really dry and boring like the filmmaker really. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for that. I'm not putting down Frontline. Well, maybe a little, but. You know, it's not the kind of thing you're going to get 125 college students to sit and watch for an hour, you know. But
sure.
This, you know, I was very interested. You know, during the movie, I was watching the movie, but I was also watching the audience as well. And you know, it's like when you go to a really good movie at the theater. You know, you can always tell it's a really good movie when people laugh during the movie at the appropriate points, or you know, whatever. You know, people are watching and they're getting into it, and that's what happened in this movie. There was laughter several times during the movie because there were some pretty humorous parts, and there was applause at the end of the movie because again, if it's a good movie, like people will applaud, and it was really well done. I think it was really it was shot in a way I think that really would make it interesting to college age students. And you know, particularly since all the people, for the most part, that were being profiled were their contemporaries. You know, people that were college age, people. So I thought the movie was great, but then really, I guess what was even more moving for me personally was I was so glad that there were some veterans that were willing to come up and speak afterwards, because they weren't really sure right up until the time that the movie started if there was going to be anyone available to speak. And and then. Again, watching the crowd, and the questions that they ask, and you could really see that a lot of people that were there, I don't think, had ever heard some of the stuff, that they were hearing, from these guys. And so I think in that regard, it was an incredibly successful event. Events at universities should be the kinds of things that open people's minds and help them learn about something that they didn't know about before. And I think, in those regards, this event could be considered a complete success. You know, it wasn't political in any way whatsoever, other than, you know, the young Democrats getting and staging a walkout. You know, other than that, you know, George W. Bush's name never came up one time. Weapons of mass destruction never came up. You know, it was totally focused on the soldiers and, you know, and their experiences. And so, I mean, that's what it was advertised, you know, as, and you know, it certainly met that criteria, and so I was very upbeat. You know, when it was over, I thought it had been very successful. I felt very happy for the college Republicans. You know, that they had managed to stage such a good event, and then I had a chance to, you know, afterwards went and spoke to the veterans at length, and again, that was great. It was a privilege, you know, to meet those guys and just shake their hands, and so it was great. You know, and I guess probably the saddest thing I heard the whole night was, you know, when I, you know, spoke to one of the former Marines. You know, he said, "Well, we've tried to have activities like this before, and only 3 or 4 people would show up." You know, and that's just unfortunate. You know, that, you know, these guys have a lot to say and a lot to share, and I think it's very useful for people. You know, no matter how you feel about the war, no matter what political viewpoint that you have, I think it's important to listen to the stories that the soldiers have to share of what they've done. Because, you know, you have to remember, the soldier doesn't pick the war. The soldier doesn't pick the commander-in-chief. You know, they just have to do what they have to go where they're told, and they have to fight the war that they're told to fight. And so it's just unfortunate a lot of it gets caught up in politics. And I hope this might be the start of something bigger, where there'll be some more you know, activities like this, both on campus and even here in the community, would be nice, you know, just to share the experiences. I noticed today on the front page of the Moscow Pullman Daily News, they have a diary of a female Navy officer who is actually kind of got serving temporarily with the Army, you know, as part of an officer exchange program that they have. And so that's good. I mean, I think it's good that, you know, that's some stories that can be shared, and again, in a non-political way, just to let people know what's going on over there.
Sure. And then just to sort of take a left-hand turn for just a moment here.
Oh, no.
what was your reaction or your thoughts when the Young Democrats and Progressive Student Union did their little walkout?
The most immediate thing that came to mind was childish, I guess, you know, immature, juvenile, any way you want to look at it, I think would be the way to, you know, to describe it. It was just pure, you know, pure political grandstanding. And like I said, that was very inappropriate, because the night really wasn't about politics. Like I said, there was never any statements made by anyone, including the college Republicans, either in support or against the war. This was a night for the troops, you know, both in the movie and afterwards, and for them to, you know, introduce this, you know, political theater to it, I thought was, you know, was highly inappropriate, and especially given the fact that, you know, that there were some real veterans that had a chance to speak later. And, you know, as I said on the blog, you know, here's a group of people, the Young Democrats, that last October were very visible downtown, holding up signs accusing Kathy McMorris of throwing veterans out into the street and that she didn't care about veterans. And yet, what was the statement that they were making by getting up and walking out before they even had a chance to hear from these veterans and what they've experienced? I mean, I think what it shows is that they could care less about veterans, except you know, in terms of you know, how they serve their political purposes. And I think that's what's really bad on both sides. I think there's been a certain amount of that, you know, where the sacrifices and you know, the troops have become a political football to be used. And I don't think that's right.
So with the Democrats, when they did their little staged walkout, you know, I think if I read correctly on some of the comments in the blog, they made it sound like it was just that was impromptu, like they just happened to all walk out at the same time.
No, I'm quite certain that was planned, because they all sat together. You know, I mean, that just seems awfully, you know, planned. And plus, they made a point of moving to the front of the auditorium, so it'd be much more. You know, if they had been in the back,
nobody would have noticed.
Yeah, no one
really
would have noticed, or if they'd gotten up, and, you know, because there were a lot of people that were still coming. It was definitely standing room only. The auditorium was totally full, And in fact, you know, rather than precipitate any kind of comment, I mean, all their demonstration did was free up some better seats, which were immediately taken by people in the back of the room. So it was kind of like, you know, I they were trying to make a point. I think it got lost on the audience. I mean, I think it kind of blew up in their face. I mean, anyone, for one thing, I don't think most people realized the point was being made. But I think if people did realize it, I'm not sure it really, you know, had any, you know, major impact. Or maybe they were thinking everyone would get up and walk out with them, but no one did. Like I said, there were a bunch of guys that just got better seats as a result of it. So much the better. So much the better.
So like, nice little backfire. You got to always love that.
Yeah.
So the now here's a question I have for you, and you're gonna have to strain and think way back to your college days. You know, I'm gonna hate to bring this up because
yes, I know. Well, I've already told the CRs that yes, back in the day.
Yeah, you admitted it.
Yes, yeah.
You were once. So let me ask, if this was, I'll be nice and I'll say if this was back in 1989 when you were in college?
No, further back than that, I'm afraid.
I know, I was trying to be nice.
Try 1983.
Okay, if I would have guessed, just throwing it out of the air, I would have said like 1979, so that's why I didn't do it. Cause
I was still in high school then, thank goodness. So.
Yes, so right. Anyway, if you had been in college at the time, mm-hmm. would you have been part of this walkout, you think? Or do you think you would have been above that?
I don't think so, and that's because even back then I really, you know, I've always been kind of a even you know, back in the days when I was in college, I was very interested in the military. In fact, even back in my, you know, when I was a young Democrat, I, you know, gave serious consideration. I was heavily recruited by and gave serious consideration to joining the ROTC branch that was on my college campus. So I don't think so. I think even back then, even though I was fairly liberal, maybe socially, I think when it came to foreign policy and the military, I was pretty conservative. I don't think I would have, because first of all, I would have had a selfish interest in hearing what these guys had to say, you know, regardless of any politics. I would have wanted to watch the movie and hear what they had to say. So,
listening to both sides of the story, then making up your mind.
Yeah, that's always a nice thing to do, isn't it?
It's unusual. I mean, because usually, you know, when you disagree with somebody, you don't listen to what they say. You just make assumptions and disagree with them, right?
I mean, right. You know, and again, that was just a minor point of the night. I mean, like I said, that was kind of a blip on the radar, and that really doesn't take away from, you know, the rest of what had happened. And like I said, I just hope this more than anything is because a lot of, you know, these vets, you know, were really a little reluctant to get up and speak, and it's because of shenanigans like the Young Democrats did that make them reluctant to speak. You know, these guys, like I said, they just have to follow orders. They don't get to pick the orders, and
sure.
You know, they have a job to do. They've signed up to do a job, and they're doing it, and they're doing their duty, and of course they have human emotions and feelings, but, you know, like anyone else, they don't want to have to stand up and publicly subject themselves to ridicule or, you know, in a situation like that, I don't think it would have been appropriate for them to try to explain, like, you know, decisions that were made by President Bush or Rumsfeld or anyone. That's not their job. You know, they were just on the ground, you know, doing what they were told. So, yeah, I don't blame them for kind of being afraid to, you know, maybe stand up and tell their story. But I'm glad that they did. And I hope maybe this will break the ice to, you know, where we can see more of these type of situations on campus. And again, not confrontation, not a debate, but just, you know, let's just ask these guys, you know, hey, what's it like? You know, you've been over there, you know, we see it on the news, and but what's it really like, you know, sure. From your perspective? And so I think it's very valuable.
All right, we got about 2 minutes left.
Two minutes, yes. One quick summary or one quick thought here before we go. Kind of.
I was going to have a question about something totally unrelated, too.
Okay, go ahead, please.
I noticed on Pelusatix, I didn't get a chance to fully read it, but there was something in there about the Whitman County Rural Ordinance.
Yes, public hearing tomorrow night in Colfax.
Well, I noticed that you had said something about the prosecutor, Dennis Tracy. It sounds like he was making a statement recently that was different than a statement he made previous.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what that was real quick?
Well, as of about 3 or 4 weeks ago, he had made a statement that the provisions in the rural residential zoning ordinance that call for viewshed protection, namely that your house cannot be visible 1,500 feet away to another house, did not meet the balance requirement for constitutionality, and that as nice as they sounded, It would have the effect of turning the Palouse into a theme park and at the expense of private property rights. And then most recently he was quoted as saying that now there are no constitutionality problems, although he still has some concerns that he would express in private to the commissioner. So I don't know what has changed between his initial, you know, the viewshed requirements are still in the ordinance as of, you know, when I looked at them this morning. So I don't know what's changed, you know, it's changed his mind. I'd be curious to see tomorrow at the workshop, maybe that will come out more of the thought process that's gone into this, that yeah, I just know the commissioners are bound and determined to have it, regardless of, you know, there's been a viewpoint expressed by some commissioners that they don't care if it gets challenged in court. They're going to have the viewshed requirements and the hilltop development restrictions.
Okay.
So I'm.
Well, I guess we'll see what comes out of that.
Here we go. Yeah. So.
All righty, and your thought of the day.
Oh, just real quickly. You know, the thought that I had passed on last week about our campus police and our local police, as people criticize them for credit cards and inappropriate emails, today's events in Blacksburg, Virginia, which is only 30 miles away from where I grew up, where 30 students were slaughtered in class today at Virginia Tech, just remember what those local police and campus police are really there for. You know, when we make all these niggling criticisms of them, that, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, they're there for us. And if something like that were to ever happen here, we'd be awfully glad to have them around.
Exactly. Rather than diving under desks like most students would do, which is very smart, they're going to come running in.
They're going to charge into it.
They're going to charge in. They're not running away. They're running into it.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, it's like a firefighter runs into a burning building.
Yep.
Police run into firefighting.
Yep.
Or into bullets.
But when we attack the WSU police and the Pullman police, I think we ought to just, you know, hope what happened in Blacksburg, Virginia today makes people think twice about that.
All right. Well, thank you for that final thought of the
day. All right. Talk to you later, Scotty.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Tom. Once again, this was the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM. We are switching over. You guys have a great day.